missing this.
When that didn't materialise, I think both Paulie and myself probably looked at each other and kind of thought, what next?
Then get this, the all-new OTB Sports app. Off the Ball, Ireland's premier sports channel, now has a new home, featuring the biggest names in Irish and world sports. Podcasts, interviews, news, commentary, analysis, plus almost 20 years of sporting archives. All free and ready when you are, at home or on the go. The new OTB Sports app. Download it now from the App Store and Google Play.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. More confident than United before a Europa League final. Gamble responsibly. See dunluey.net.
Pat, Nevin, hello.
How are you doing? How are you doing?
You well? Tired. My head is spinning. I can't make sense of everything that's going on. We last spoke during PSG Atalanta. It feels like 6 months ago in terms of footballing stories. My God, a lot has happened.
Oh, wow. It's do you know when you're sort of, it's a word I hate, but the word pundit, I hate it anyway. But when you're a pundit, people ask you to guess what's going to happen. And you're like, and then you look at what happens in the Champions League and you go, no one can guess that. That's just mentalness. I mean, particularly the Barca. And then watching what Manchester City done against Lyon, honestly, head and hands, 10 minutes in, just like, what are you doing, Pep? The madness surrounding it is kind of unbelievable. It feels like people are almost deliberately shooting themselves in the foot. It gets that bad, some of the time with some of these games. And I know some of the teams are a bit tired, and particularly the British teams are tired, you know, United, City, at the end of the season. But I'm not giving City that one. I'm absolutely not giving them it. Because they've known for a long time they're not going to win the Premier League. So they had the opportunity to rest people. They weren't going to miss out on the top four. They had the opportunity. So they can't use that as an excuse. It was just, I'm actually dead disappointed. I don't know about you. Really disappointed. Go and watch. I've seen City a lot this season. And then they turn up and do that. And it's all my dreams are getting destroyed here. You know, like Barca, you know, falling apart the way they did. And it's kind of been ready to go for a while. And it's just finally happened. And then City, when they need to turn up, they don't turn up. And it's two teams I love watching, but do you know what I hope doesn't happen? I really hope people don't say, oh, well, that was just Yesterday's way how to play football. We're going in a different direction now. You know, because that worked for a while, didn't it?
It sure did. At the moment, you suspect in Man City's case it might still have worked if they hadn't abandoned it in part. How do you explain Pep's thought process here? The best we can come up with when we were chatting just before you came on was that he is now ascribing such importance to these Champions League knockout games and they mean so much to him that he almost can't believe it's as simple as going out and doing what they've done for the last 2, 3, 4 years, that he has to retreat into a room and come up with some ingenious tactical piece of brilliance, masterstroke, which will catch everyone unawares and this will somehow guarantee safe passage through to the next round. Because we're talking about a team seventh in Ligue 1, they've lost 9 times in 26 French League games. If he was playing seventh in the Premier League, he'd just go out and play. So explain it to me.
Well, yes, he overthought it. He definitely overthought it. There's no doubt about that. So he looked at their back line. Now, he actually owned up to it after the game. But I was sitting beside Chris Waddle watching the game. And we were trying to figure out beforehand, is he going to go three at the back? And then, so he's trying to second guess him. Right, so because your defenders are slow. Right, by the way, and that's nobody's fault but your own. If you spend 350 million quid in defenders, that's nobody else's fault, right? But you think, kind of get it. And then you can play wing-backs. And if you look at the opposition, Leon have got kind of decent-ish wing-backs that get up there. And you think, yeah, I can kind of see it. And then you go and put two sitting midfielders. And you go, well, no, that's just too far. That's just too far. What are you doing? You're putting double cover in front of three centre-backs. Now, this is the big thing. Right? See, if you're doing, you're analysing football, right? Just because it happens to be Pep or one of the great names, you've got to blank it. You've got to say, no. If he's doing something that looks wrong, you've got to say, I think that looks really wrong. And I tell you, 15, 20 minutes, Chris Waddle and I are going, that's a shambles. That is a mess. We would just please change it. And I'm saying, we'll get immediately, I know who you need to get Fernandinho off. Just get him off now. You can bring on, you know, you're one of the Silvas, you know, definitely Mahrez or whatever, but you can do that. That's 15 minutes in, right? Pep does it after, is it 60? And you're thinking, well, if it's right at 60, we're definitely right at 15, 20, you know, or adapt the system, it ain't working. And he has over, and we've all played, every player's played under managers that overthought it. Do you know, quite often the ones that do it are international managers, because they sit there and they chin stroke for like 2 months between games, and they overthink it. And you're right, you got to a point there where Pep's thinking of the Champions League as almost like international. It's totally different from everything else. So he thinks about it differently. Don't, you're absolutely right, just don't. Just go and play your game. Impose yourself in the opposition. And there's a psychology that a player feels. You go out and then you look and you think, actually, they're not as confident. You feel it on the pitch. Or the manager's put out that team and you go, yee-haw. And honestly, Leon must have thought that right from the beginning. And the big disappointment for Pep's brilliance in so many ways, why didn't you see it? Or did you see it? And were you just too cussed not to change it? And there's a bit of you that thinks that, isn't there? That everyone can see this. I mean, everyone. I'm sure you saw that and thought, well, that's not working. You know, so we can all see it. And he still won't change it. 55, 56, whatever it is, minutes, he changes it. They then score and then control the game. Now, it gets weird after that. But the only argument I can give for him is it was about 2 or 3 minutes in the game. There was a break in the inside right position for Leon. And I went, whoa, they're stuffed for pace. They have nothing like the pace of the opposition here. So I can kind of see why he did it. But that also goes back to you spent 300 million quid or over 300 million quid in defenders. You've got to have somebody that's a bit quick. And if you come up with all these ideas, all right, we're stuffed for pace. Okay, we'll move Kyle Walker at the centre back then. You know, if it's just pace you're worried about, like, stick him there. You'll be fine. But he didn't seem to do anything. It was very, very weird to sit and allow what Man City are good at not to happen at all.
Yeah, it's quite damning, really. It's weird when you just look at the match, and then it's weird when, as you say, he spent 200 million plus on defenders, and this is what he's ended up with, you know. And you've John Stones sitting there, and he's been celebrated, Pep, for the way he's improved Raheem Sterling, and can't seem to get John Stones to a level. You feel John Stones can't be a million miles off. And we had Kenny Cunningham on yesterday, and he was talking about just the instincts of Garcia, who, you know, ball played over the top for the first goal under no pressure, and Garcia, you know, comes up and is flat-footed as opposed to, you know, going back towards goal. Or then Kyle Walker doesn't react, like Cornet is behind him as the play begins and Garcia makes the tackle, and Cornet suddenly is however many yards ahead of Walker, who, and then Walker thinks, oh God, maybe there's trouble here. And you look at all those odd instincts, be it Garcia, be it Walker, and just City generally defensively, and the money spend combined with the lack of improvement in their defence, and that is very damning of Pep as well. You know, we're pitching this guy as potentially and probably the best coach in the world, and that's where we are 4 years in.
See, the instinct thing that yourself and Kenny were talking about, it's absolutely nailed on, and it gets to the core of it. Do you think when Pep Guardiola goes out to buy a defender, he thinks about the defending first? Or does he think, how good are you on the ball? And how good are you passing out and playing for the back? What's A in his mind and what's B? And I think we all know what A and B is. He wants, I mean, once again, some of them didn't look bad. Mendel looked like a great signing, but he's went backwards. You know, Stones looked to be really improving for a while, and then he just dropped him completely. Even Nathan Aké, almost the perfect one. You know, he is lovely on the ball. He's a very, very strong centre back. Let me tell you something else about Nathan. He's not quick. He's just gone and bought another one. And I really like Nathan. I mean, really like him. I think he's a great player. I really like him. But he's bought another one that isn't quick. You just think, you've done that again. You've just walked into it again. And have somebody like Nathan Aké, but have a lightning quickie beside him. And that's absolutely fine. So, you know, I do think it's what you're saying. I think it's that concept of, right, they don't think that way because he's trying to buy footballers and not defenders. And there's a bit of me that kind of wants them to do that. But they got to be able to do it. And then when you don't believe in them, you then just do the oldest one in the book, is if your two centre-halves aren't good enough, you put another one in there as well. It sounds more complicated, but it isn't. That's what they do. And that's what he tried to do. And it still didn't work. And also, you're playing a high line. Mm. You're playing a high line against people that are quick. You just, what? Mm. This is kind of basic stuff.
It makes next season very, very important for him and for how his regime will be remembered. Let's move on to Barcelona. It's just extraordinary. So I mentioned Kenny Cunningham was on the show yesterday and I asked him to try and analyse Barcelona. You're going to have to help me out here because as you'll hear, Kenny doesn't even know where to start with this absolute mess. Have a listen.
It's hard to think of an analogy like, do you know, I remember once when I was growing up, somebody having dinner, somebody was walking with a trifle across the floor to the table. Everybody's waiting for this trifle. So anyway, tripped up, the trifle hits the ground. So it's picked up. You know, you pick it up in scoopfuls and you slap it back into the bowl and you come over and you present it, you put it on the table and you're just, everybody's looking into this bowl thinking, oh no, that's an absolute mess. I don't want any part of this.
Pat Nevin, analyse this trifle which has flown everywhere.
I love it. I love that analogy. It's damn good because the mess that it is totally unpalatable. Everybody's looking at it, and I suppose part of it, people don't actually want to say it's a mess. That's another part of it, because it is a mess. Mm. And people are going, yeah, but it's trifle or it's Barcelona, and it, but it's a shambles. It's a complete mess. And honestly, I don't know where to start on it, because I mean, I'm upset, actually I'm bothering and angry about it, because they were my dream, Barcelona were, and many other people's dream, what they did for that period of time. But that is now a long time ago. That is now in the past. Maybe that's miles in the past. And I'll not come back, certainly not with this group of players anyway. But some of the attitudes of some of the players, that really, really angered me.
Messi included?
Yes, absolutely. Walking about. You know, and quite clearly the players have got too much strength there, quite clearly. And to be honest, he's probably intelligent enough a guy, you know, I could run about like a lunatic all day today. It won't make any difference. It's not going to win the game, like, because there's so many things wrong. Watching it, and it's how saddening to see Suarez scored a great goal, but everybody knows he's too slow. Mm. For that level, he's too slow. You're not going to be good enough at that level now. So if you want to be Barcelona and be one of the best in the world, that's gone now. He looks a wee bit podgy even.
He has for a few years.
Yeah. It's kind of weird that he gets away with it because your team are controlling things and that. But when it falls off that cliff, that's a big old drop and it's a quick drop. And they've had it now. Some of the attitudes, I mean, I sometimes watch our player and you're looking at certain players who are working hard and you're thinking, you're working hard, but you're now beginning to look stupid because the guy beside you isn't. Mm. And the one that was really getting him, there was two actually. Vidal, that was it. Arturo Vidal. He did that classic thing that he goes and chases a ball. You're about 6-2 down or whatever it is, right? He goes and chases a ball and he runs over and he tries to dive in and tackle, which is the laziest thing in the world to do. The number of fans that are watching from the telly is going, yeah, he's trying. No, you're not. What you're doing is diving in so you don't have to do your hard yards back. Mm. Every player knows it. You've just thrown yourself in there. Then he goes and starts shouting at the referee, trying to get sent off so that he can say, I cared. Mm. And it's absolute garbage. Utter garbage. It was infuriating. Do you know what it is, Arthur? You're miles too slow for that. You've just not got, for that level, you're miles and miles away from it. Right, so by the way, you notice I'm not mentioning the manager here. It's nothing got to do with the coach. Mm. This is nothing got to do with him at all. Mm. This is much, much deeper. This is completely out of this. And there was just so many attitudes of so many players that really annoyed me. And I could go through it. Was it Roberto 20? Oh, honestly, the arrogance of the man during the game was beyond me. I'm saying, don't be arrogant when you're 8-2 down, mate. He wasn't 8-2, he got substituted at some point. But don't be arrogant when you're getting battered like this. Don't walk about with that attitude. Get your head down and work, and at least try for your teammates. But it's a classic one, this where they used to be the perfect, intricate, clockwork team, everybody working together, nobody worked together. Absolutely nobody worked together.
And doesn't that stem quite probably from the leader of the group and the club, ultimately, in most respects, Messi? And so this is how he behaves. And for a time, you know, dispensation to do it because he's so talented and others could make up for it. But gradually, as they've aged, more and more have kind of jumped ship into his camp and they're not working hard. And there is also, you know, tied in with that, and this is the other point I want to ask you about, the 900 million now famously spent since 2015, and even the 350 million spent on Griezmann, Coutinho and Dembele from Friday, two of them on the bench, the other scoring against Barcelona. There is a lingering suspicion increasingly that really good players are being signed to Barcelona. And unless, you know, Messi and his group feel you have Barcelona in your DNA, I wonder how hospitable it is. I wonder how much you're welcomed. I wonder how much you're encouraged to really blossom or take ownership of the team. It can't just be that all these, you know, Griezmann is still a fine player. It can't just be, oh, he wasn't suited to our style of play, and either was Coutinho and someone else isn't suited, someone else isn't suited. Like, we've done 29 players since 2015, and the feeling is not one of them has been a success. The bottom line then is, to link those two points together, Messi, understandably, has too much influence in this dressing room, and therefore we're not seeing a team working hard, and we're seeing a group who don't run around and rule the dressing room, and the new arrivals aren't exactly given a chance to blossom or take over. And that is a major issue now that the new manager in Koeman needs to get to grips with somehow.
And on top of that, you would add the fact that those older players actually in themselves are not aware of the fact that that is the problem.
Do you not think so?
They look at the young players and say, oh, they're not as good as us. They're not as good as us. We've won all these championships. And what they forget is that's past tense. They forget that. They just blank that. We did this. They still, because you've got this mindset where you must feel you are the best. You won't get anywhere on the top level of football unless you feel that.
Yeah.
So they'll still feel that, even though they're 32, 33, 34, whatever, and slowing down, etc. They will blame it on everybody else. Everybody else. Now, you know, I'm not pointing it directly only at Messi. It must be a hell of a hard if you are that talented and nobody else is close to you.
Mm.
And the ones that are coming in are even further away, because he could look at Xavi and he could look at Iniesta and think, yeah, you're at kind of my level. You're okay. You know, and certainly he's felt the few, same about Neymar, I think, as well. Mm. You know, you're at kind of my level. You can do that. But the rest of them will just go, nah. You know, and it's, you can understand if you try and put his point of view, you know, look at his point of view, he will think along those lines. The thing is, you can't do that on a football team. Eventually, you need to get a football team that is a team. And the classic one, go back to the last number of years, I'm sure I've told you this before, I'm sure most people know it. The two players over the last number of years that do the least amount of running in the Champions League, and it's by a million miles, it's Ronaldo and it's Messi. They don't run. Right, so they better keep on being unbelievably brilliant, because you can't play with 10 men unless they are unbelievably brilliant now and again. The thing is, they both were for periods of time, but it doesn't last forever. And certainly just looking at it there. And I think if you, and I don't know if it's Messi's gang, I'm not in that dressing room, I don't know. And I don't want to believe it's that. But there is certainly a core group. And that core group, if you're in their gang, it's almost as if you're in the kind of, you don't need to try too hard. And I know this because I've played in teams like this where they were quite successful beforehand, and then they spend their time just snarling at the younger ones, and you're thinking, yeah, but you can't run, mate.
Yeah.
And it happens. It's so, so common. It's happened to me at international football, and it's happened to me in club football as well, in the top level. So it happens all the time. This isn't just Barcelona. You need to have the strength of a manager who can actually change it, who's not only got the bravery to change it, but who's actually got the backing to change it.
Mm.
And as we all get back in, and you know fine well, we all know fine well, nobody's had that for a long time at Barca.
Mm. Before you go, Manchester United.
Yeah, I felt a wee bit sorry for them. They didn't actually play that badly, did they? Certainly after half-time, they had a regular chance. They could have gone ahead, got a couple of goals there, and you know everyone would have been looking at it in a different way. A wee bit disappointed that he did run out of legs, you know, and that was maybe a surprise to me. I mean, I'd certainly watched Sevilla against Wolves. I'd been covering that game, and I thought Man United would have plenty for them. I just thought they'd hammer them. They'd get lots of chances, and they would certainly score. Well, they did get a lot of chances, just didn't score enough. There was one big bit that jumped out at me, and we're back on defenders again. Remind me who it was. Ball played across for the second goal.
Isaka.
in two centre backs.
It was Lindelof who dropped off Lindelof. Oh, sorry, yeah. I thought Lindelof. I mean, he could have done a bit better, but it's all on Bissaka, no?
Lindelof's got to look.
Does
Bissaka's he? Not, yeah, he's got to look.
But can Bissaka not see everything?
Well, see, if you're Maguire and you're not really marking anybody, and Lindelof's got Maguire in front of him.
Mm.
You think, well, you've not got anybody, and I've not got anyone. I should really have a wee look around here. You're talking about natural defenders. They go, whoa, alarm bells. You look round immediately.
Mm.
So Bissaka should have covered round, maybe shouted and all that sort of thing. But when Lindelof is having a go at Bruno Fernandes afterwards, they're having a shout and a ball.
Yeah.
I'm with Fernandes in that one.
Oh, were you? Sorry, that's so interesting. Earlier, I was jumping to the defence of Lindelof. I was saying, look, surely the rule is, yeah, I take your point, he should have looked. But ultimately, if you've got Bissaka behind you and a man in between the two of you, it is 98% on Bissaka.
No, I wouldn't say 98%. I would maybe give you 50. I'd maybe give you 50. Because you're a centre-back, and that's where the goals go in. The goals go in at centre-backs. You're always looking. You're always there. If you don't look there and expect everyone else to cover everything, I mean, any sort of midfielders could come in there.
No, it's true.
Any sort of wingers could come in. All sorts of people. You kind of got to look. And if you don't, and he never did at any point. And if he had a man, if he's got a man beside him, I'm letting him off of that completely.
Yeah.
So it's not. So we all make mistakes, and that's fine, and that's okay. But the fact that he made the mistake and then argued that he didn't make a mistake, and I'm going, no, don't do that.
Bruno getting up in his grill. It's like you stay out of it. I mean, if you feel that badly about it, you track back. But okay, well that's very interesting. So if Lindelof had at least looked, you'd have given him more of a pass because that would have shown the right instinct.
Yeah, if he looks and he doesn't get him, or he gets done with a good bit of forward then back movement, he can't get it. But at no point, he just keeps on looking at the ball the whole time. And if he's looking at the ball over there, and between him and the ball is his other centre-half mate, who's not really got anyone either.
Mm.
Alarm bells, you kind of, and it's what you say about defenders. It's this natural instinct to defend. Kenny would have been shouting about it. He'd have been having custard over the walls in that one.
Yeah, the trifle, I mean, the least of his worries at that stage. Okay, so look, on we march. We've got semi-finals this week, and the next time we talk, we'll have a Champions League final to talk about, so we'll see you next Monday.
Looking forward to it. It should be good to him. We never even mentioned Bayern.
I know. Well, listen, I suspect we may be mentioning them next week. Pat and Evan, thanks very much.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. More confident than United before a Europa League final. Gamble responsibly. See dunluey.net.
Second half in the Europa League semi-final just underway. Inter leading Shakhtar Donetsk by a goal to nil. We'll keep you up to date on that game. Seville awaiting in the semi-final. Later on, we'll be over to Spain, in fact. Andy West will talk to us about the situation at Barcelona, not surprisingly, which is a mess and which Ronald Koeman now has to sort out. We might ask Andy as well, though, about Julian Lopetegui, who has redeemed his reputation massively at Seville. It is a long time now since he was turfed out of the World Cup in 2018 and sacked by Madrid about 10 games into his reign there. So we'll talk to Andy West about all of that. It has been a mad couple of days in the world of football. Pat Nevin was on earlier on, if you missed him, talking about various bits and bobs. And given that there are now two French clubs in the Champions League semi-finals tomorrow and Wednesday, we thought it would be good to catch up with the always brilliant Philippe Auclair. And we started well by taking a glance back at the last few days and asking him, where the hell are we meant to start with all this?
I don't know. Should we just make a selection and take our pick almost at random? I mean, there are so many ways to look at what's happened, which is quite extraordinary. But maybe start from the fact that it's the first time in the history of the Champions League or the European Cup that Ligue 1 has got two representatives in the semi-finals.
Yes, indeed. This Farmers League of yours ain't so bad.
Yes. Well, there's farm and farm. This is obviously kind of quite a posh one with a very fine produce. It's true you haven't seen too much of it in the past few years apart from the same one. But actually, I'm being tough when I say that. Remember Monaco, they weren't so bad. Remember Lille, they weren't so bad either. So, no, it's a rather wondrous surprise given the state French football was in just a few months ago. Remember when the decision was taken to abandon the league, and people said in France to start with, this is the proof we're going nowhere, this is the proof we're rubbish, and so forth. And And now actually some people, you know, are thinking back and are wondering, I wonder if that forced rest hasn't actually been a good thing for French clubs, judging how physically they were superior to their adversaries in this particular competition. But that's a different subject.
Mm. Let's go back to last week then for a moment and PSG Atalanta, PSG trailing for 64 minutes in this game. I was looking at Thomas Tuchel and his boot and I was thinking, not since Steve McLaren and his brolly in the rain has a prop been so perfect for the mood, and there were ashen-faced players around the stands. And it looked for all the world like we would be talking about PSG once again succumbing to a mixture of pressure and whatever other attribute you want to suggest they're lacking. And they came through in the most dramatic fashion.
Yes, and when you say that, you make me think almost like one of these characters in a Martin Scorsese movie who's been put he's been made to put on concrete boots, so to speak, and finishes in the bay. And a kind of weird version of Marcelo Bielsa as well, sitting on this box. It looked very bad, and especially when you know that Thomas Tuchel is by no means somebody who is not criticized at PSG, and you thought, well, here we go again. But this time they found the answer. I'm not absolutely sure it was the toughest test that they could possibly have had, and we shouldn't forget that Atalanta were absolutely magnificent until basically physically they gave way. They were not able to harry the Parisian players as much as they had done for about an hour. And then you saw as well the incredible impact that even on one and a half leg, Kylian Mbappe can have on the game. And he came back just at the right time. Without him, I don't know if it would have happened. But I mean, the parallel is quite extraordinary, isn't it, when you think about Manchester City and PSG, because both teams are always compared for many reasons, obviously for the financing, for the disappointments in the Champions League. And on one hand, you've got Raheem Sterling missing an open goal, and on the other, you've got Neymar missing open goals as well, but Neymar going through. And you think, well, is there something that PSG have done that Manchester City haven't done, which is basically to have luck on their side? And it might be their year. This is now, I think, then the main problems, if that's not a problem, actually, but it's now that the competition starts. I mean, it was extraordinary to hear many of my French colleagues talk about that game against Atalanta as being, in fact, the start of the season for PSG. You know, they've done the treble in France and nobody's talked about it. It's become so ordinary, so expected, that it means not much, really. So it is the big one for them, just as it was the big one for Manchester City. But they're through.
Am I right in saying that there was never a domestic treble in France until 6 years ago, and since then PSG have done it four times?
Yeah, you're correct.
I know. So I can see why there is a hollowness to that.
There is a hollowness, and when they don't do it, as was the case the season before that, people looked at Rennes and at Strasbourg winning the French Cup and the League Cup, thinking, oh, it's just a pure chance, whatever. It will never happen again. It was a massive surprise. Whereas, you know, it was not quite the same thing, I would say, for Manchester City's treble. I mean, people were expecting perhaps a little bit more resistance from the opposition. But it's come to that point, yes, where honestly there is so little competition throughout the season for the title that it's par for the course. Even with Lyon reaching the semi-finals and beating the clubs they have beaten, this one changed what we're going to see from next week onwards in the French League. I reassure you, by the way, Lyon and PSG have got their first games postponed, so they won't have to play in the French League over the next weekend either.
What about Neymar's performance? So often the pantomime villain for various reasons and excesses, but chances he seemed to continually miss aside, I think the general consensus, rightly, is that he was very good in this game.
He was magnificent. He was absolutely superb. He was, I think, on another plane from any of his teammates, perhaps until Kylian Mbappe came on and had such a massive impact. But I don't think that would be a big surprise to people who've followed him over the years at PSG, where he's had loads of criticism, particularly for his off-the-field antics, and for the fact that very often he hasn't been available at the most important moments in his club seasons. But when he's been around, he's actually performed extremely well. And you could say, for example, this season, well, honestly, things haven't been always very good in terms of the game that PSG has played with Tuchel. Very often, the one spark was Neymar. And Angel Di Maria was for a while, who, by the way, is back from suspension, which is a big plus for Thomas Tuchel. But very often, Neymar was the one shining light with Kylian Mbappe in that Parisian team and was actually quite consistent. Unfortunately, he missed so many games in so many important games that the perception is skewed, I'm afraid, of what he's brought to the table.
Mm. Yeah, it's very interesting because I was even just checking the stats. In 83 appearances, he scored 70 goals and created 40 more. Now, it doesn't matter if you're playing in a league where you're clearly dominant. You have to be doing a lot of things right to come up with that kind of produce. So I've definitely fallen into the bracket of those who have a skewed vision of Neymar, to be honest. I mean, at 28, I just viewed him almost as close to a flop.
Yeah, but I think that you could say that in a way he is. And I just contradicted myself here, but the choice he made to leave Barcelona, when you see what's happened to Barcelona and how important he could have been for that club, and joining PSG, where basically he was joining a team where he was guaranteed to win 2-3 titles a season, maybe was not the best way to challenge his huge talent. There is still some frustration about him because, you know, he still hasn't achieved with this national team what he thought and dreamed he could achieve. And what he's achieved with PSG has been achieved by others and probably would have been achieved without him. And, even though he's been a shining light and he's been magnificent in so many occasions and so forth. And he could be the man who makes all the difference this time round, when honestly, it's a chance that PSG might not get twice or thrice. I mean, you know, you look at what's happened to them and the draw and the way things have been going for them, the physical freshness in which they're at, the fact that, okay, they've got two players missing. Big miss is Verratti, obviously, we're still injured. The other, Keylor Navas, I think Rico is a very decent second keeper, so I don't think they will feel that too much, but they're almost at full strength. They look physically excellent. And they are there so close to what they've always been dreamt of, you know, since the Qataris took over in 2011.
No, it's certainly a big chance now, suddenly. And on Neymar, so except then that he's producing maybe more consistently on the pitch than I might have suspected. I think in part, Philippe, that's because the perception, I mean, that I have and that many have is that because so often when he pops into our consciousness, it's because he's missing for a big Champions League game, or it's his birthday and he's gone partying for about 6 days straight and missed.
Or it's the carnival in Rio, and
all that stuff. You know, and you think, my God, this guy's a troublemaker. Has he, to any extent, do we know or do we suspect, at 28 years of age, grown up and become more of a leader, more of a team player, or is it much the same off the field?
Listen, I've been told by a number of people who follow PSG much more closely than I do, who are there, you know, all the time, go to the park, also spend the time at the Camp des Loges, speak to a lot of people, all of whom have said that they think that it was a more mature Neymar they had seen at work this season in particular. And also he has taken very well to being a leader, which is a bit surprising, not just a technical leader, when, you know, some of the big names have been missing, you know, when Kylian Mbappe was injured, when Angel Di Maria was not available. And also his role apparently has been very important during the lockdown period and during the hiatus of the French season when they got back together to train. Apparently his influence was really positive. He was really up for it and really took on that responsibility of being the main guy. He took it very well. That's what I'm being told. I'm a little bit cautious about that because it's not the first time I've heard such a thing, and that, you know, sometimes 2 weeks, maybe 2 hours afterwards, you've heard about another little, you know, kerfuffle or another excursion to Rio or something like that. But it certainly hasn't had any impact on his game. And he appears to have had a more consistent behavior off the pitch as well as on it this season.
Mm. You mentioned Thomas Tuchel then. There is a workmanlike quality to aspects of PSG now. Idrissa Gueye and Andres Herrera in midfield. I mean, that is not Galactico central. I mean, we're talking about players who are doing the right things and doing steady things on the pitch and not vacating areas and all the boring stuff. You suspect that, yep, that maybe we would think PSG are not overly interested in. So in that respect, Thomas Tuchel deserves, I would think, a fair degree of credit here. Is this the vision he's been working towards? Has it been difficult for him to convince the powers that be that, you know, there has to be a pragmatism to PSG's play? You might give us your sense of what Tuchel has done.
I think that whatever he's going to do, he's going to have his fair share of criticism. The problem he's had is the obligation of fielding the so-called Fantastic Four, which is basically Neymar, Mbappé, Di Maria, and Icardi. And he might very well do it against RB Leipzig, which might come as a surprise to you because you would think, well, he's actually found a formula that works. But apparently he's not going to keep it. It's always a little bit tricky because he's not a manager who is not without his criticism within the club itself. His relationship with Leonardo is not the best. There have even been people who said that Leonardo has in a way been soaping the plank, as we say in French, for Tuchel on several occasions, that they don't necessarily see eye to eye. And he has yet to decide on a particular tactical setup that he will, you know, create a game identity, so to speak, that you will recognize as being undoubtedly PSG. And there was at one point, yes, there was Herrera, Marquinhos, Paredes, or Idrissa Gueye, and you would have these three in midfield, and then which would give Paris, you know, a much more solid basis from which to use their fantasistas.
Yeah.
But there's always the temptation to go back to this four, and he's probably going to play this four. I mean, which on the paper looks fantastic, but then it's up to Marquinhos and Paredes probably to do the dirty job and allow them to flourish. Again, whether we should criticize Tuchel or laud him for that, you know, answer if and when they qualify or get dumped. Believe me, if they fail against RB Leipzig, he's going to get an awful lot of stick, regardless of everything that's happened beforehand.
Okay, so Marquinhos and Paredes will be giving the team the foundation, whereas the other evening, if people didn't catch the game overly, Mbappe was injured, Di Maria was suspended, which was the reason we had Idrissa Gueye and Andres Herrera coming in there. It sounds like you suspect that may be a mistake, this more cavalier approach tomorrow may be a mistake.
I mean, the form of Neymar is so terrific, and Di Maria as well coming back is a huge plus. Mbappe, it's not going to be, I think, at 100%, but even at 95% is going to be something. The question mark for me is Icardi, whom I found very unconvincing, to say the least, since the football has come back. And he's had his moments at PSG. There have been times where he's been extremely efficient. That hasn't been the case since then. And I'm a little bit dubious about this, even though Marquinhos, on a good day, is one of the best, honestly, in this position. He can do an awful lot of work. But yes, I do have my doubts. I think it's a bit too cavalier, but I'm willing to be proven absolutely wrong. You know, it's just a feeling I have that seeing Icardi not really firing as he should, doing some good work up front, but playing his back to goal, which honestly he's not good at, not the best at. And I'm also wondering if it is the best way to use Neymar as well, because an awful lot of defensive duties won't be Icardi, well, and Neymar. It will be certainly up to Di Maria and Mbappe to cover the fullbacks, which are, you know, quite adventurous fullbacks. When you think of Bernat and Kerr, they do like to go up the field as well. So I'm just wondering if the balance is correct against a team like RB Leipzig. We shall see. We don't know.
We shall see. Mbappe, you mentioned, I mean, his impact was extraordinary the other evening. About Neymar's motivations and his move to Paris, Mbappe has the world at his feet. I suspect he quite enjoys living in Paris and playing for PSG and life is good. But do we know, does he have ambitions to play outside of Ligue 1? Do we know where his future lays?
There were noises at one point, I would say about a year ago, when you did get the feeling, and actually we had some information that put people in his entourage were sounding various other people, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
He was not too enamored with what was going on. He didn't really, wasn't obviously really sure of where the club was going. There had been internal problems. He also had some disciplinary problems, which were very unlike him. Remember when he had these red cards and he looked really nervous and on the pitch? This has changed. And I think an awful lot depends, again, on this one game, which is crazy. You would think that the project that has been built and paid for and financed in Paris would not revolve perhaps about the result of one final, basically, at this stage. But unfortunately, it is. Mm. The rumors have calmed down, though, about him. First of all, it would cost you a few pennies. And I don't think there are many clubs at the moment who are in a financial situation where they could look at spending, how much, 150 million, 170 million, 200 million? I mean, Neymar was 220 million. Kylian Mbappe is just at the very start of what looks to be a prodigious career. So I don't think at the moment any club could possibly, apart from Barcelona, because everything I hear about Barcelona, which you've probably heard in the last 36 hours, I don't know. Maybe they will sell everybody and buy everybody. That's about the only situation in which I could imagine Mbappe leaving Paris at the moment. It's much too precious for them, and he's in a good place at the moment.
Okay. When you talk about the consequences of for the project of this season's Champions League, does that extend to Tuchel as well? I mean, is his job just in the balance? Yeah. Is that just the case for every PSG manager now?
Yes, it is the case for every PSG manager. He's not at all in the kind of position of strength that, for example, Pep Guardiola is. Because the Manchester City project was built, certainly in its third phase, was built around Pep Guardiola. So it completely relies on Pep Guardiola and the people who are around him, with him, to function. Tuchel is an employee of the club. He's not somebody, he's not a manager in the sense that Pep Guardiola is a manager. There's the presence of Leonardo, of course, is something which is very important. The importance that the club's owners place on the results is also all important. And they've showed in the past, that they can get rid of managers just like that. And should he fail, this week, yes, his future would definitely be in doubt.
Okay, well, that game's tomorrow. Leon, their prize for beating Manchester City is Bayern Munich, which will be no easy task, to say the least. Just on Pep, seeing as you mentioned him, Philippe, where is his stock for you now? We don't need to go into the ins and outs of his tactical mistakes. I think they've been well discussed and much discussed at this stage, but they were fairly dramatic mistakes in such an important game. Where is Pep's stock for you now?
As high as it was. Because the mistakes that are referred to are in fact not mistakes as such, but they're components of his personality, of his game philosophy. He's made these mistakes before. I mean, before the game, I was actually quite confident in the chances of Lyon, because I thought that he would make the same mistake he made against Tottenham in the quarterfinal last year. And I think he did something remember when he put Kevin De Bruyne on the bench?
Yeah.
And he did something similar. In a different way, but he did something similar. So it's part of the Pep Guardiola approach. And I think to consider him as he's not as good, he's a fraud and so forth, on the basis of one game in which everything depended on the ball bobbling in front of the goal is utterly ludicrous. He's not quite the all-seeing genius that people have made him into. But he's certainly not a useless manager. He's a truly great manager and probably the greatest manager of his generation. It's just football happens.
Yes. Certainly, I mean, nobody, I think, credible thinks he's anything but a brilliant manager. But as you put it very well there, all-seeing genius he is not. I mean, this is a trend now. This has happened in too many games where And again, it's tough to go inside his head and know exactly what's going on, but he seems to be attributing such importance to these Champions League games that you suspect he's overthinking them in some way.
And, yeah, very much so, yeah.
If he was up against 7th, and maybe 7th in Ligue 1 was a false position for Lyon, but if Manchester City were playing 7th in the Premier League, they would simply go out and impose themselves in the game and win it and think nothing of it. So you just wonder... Is it a loss of nerve? Is there some level of self-doubt there? I'd be fascinated to get his honest account of why, when it comes to these moments, he is wobbling and weirdly going away from, you know, his resolute principles. It was an extraordinary decision.
Was it the memory of what happened in the group phase last season, where Lyon were a really tough opponent? Was it a little bit too much respect for Lyon's, you know, European pedigree, which is genuine? Was it, and which is what I'm more tempted to believe, that it's the fact that I think Lyon should be given a huge amount of credit for the way they set up and the unbelievable, I'm going to use this old expression, unbelievable belief, which they showed throughout the game. And also physically, they were in super shape, which they really showed until the very last second. But remember, you know, 2011, 2012, when Chelsea, 10-man Chelsea, eliminated Barcelona, and that was the Barcelona of Xavi, Iniesta and Messi and everybody, and a Chelsea side that was perhaps, in paper, one of the weakest of the Abramovich era. They still won on over two legs. And you had the feeling when you watched that game, and I remember talking at length with a few friends, like Jonathan Wilson and others, you really get the feeling that it was almost like a game philosophy which had been taken to the almost an absurd degree of sophistication. And there's one point when it becomes quite sterile. And I think it's time for him, and this is, you know, he describes himself as a Cruyffian, you know, as a disciple of Johan Cruyff. Now, one thing I would never associate with Johan Cruyff and his size, his Barcelona sides, would be sterility. They were sometimes frail, fragile. They could suddenly crack, as they did against Milan, as we all remember. But what they had was an incredible freedom of expression. And I think it's perhaps that way that he's going to consider things, perhaps to give his players back some freedom of expression, which, for me, they had lost in that game. And which is what happens when you think too much about things and you're not quite on song and your tactical organization is not quite what it should be. And also you get a few bad calls, or bad calls, actually not bad calls. You get a few calls against you, and which is just part of the game. And then you cannot really react against that because you've lost that capacity to express yourself beyond a tactical organization. You've lost the sense of madness. And this sense of madness and chaos, which is something, for example, which you would equate with Klopp's Liverpool, is not something that you equate with Guardiola's Manchester City. He's going to have to integrate it in his extraordinary capacity to make people play as they can play under him, in terms of the way they find each other, you know, with closed eyes, the way that they place themselves on the ground, on the field of play. It's going to be fascinating to see how he reacts and bounces back from that.
Before you go, we're going to be checking in with Barcelona in a few moments' time. So this is the low, as PK said, all-time low, certainly in the last this century, and they can't ignore the problems for another season. 900 million spent in the last 5 years on Sid Lowe, had 29 players, and he doesn't think one of them could be called an out-and-out success, which is an extraordinary achievement, even if you were trying to do that. So 900 million spent, Messi at 33, some aging key cogs around him, and just a sense of devastation about the whole club. Do you suspect they can bounce back more quickly from this than we're talking about at the moment? Because the consensus is that it's a root and branch rebuild. Bartomeu must go. La Masia needs to be looked at again. You can see how they might need to do that. But equally, a club of Barcelona's stature, money problems and issues aside, which can generally be sorted out one way or another, you can see them coming back relatively quickly still, I would think. Are you into that end of era, this could be a 4 or 5 year rebuild job territory?
The latter, yes.
Yeah. Latter.
The latter. Because I have to say that I've spoken to quite a few Barca shareholders, sources. They're all very worried about the situation of Lionel Messi. They're all wondering if he could walk away. they wouldn't blame him for it. Bartomeu is detested in a way that I cannot think any other president has ever been detested, in terms certainly of the number of people who want him out. It's not that they bought bad players, by the way. You know, Antoine Griezmann is a magnificent player. De Jong is a magnificent player. So you think that they've still got people there who are, you know, excellent. So you don't expect them to, you know, be in danger of relegation from La Liga. But to get back to the kind of level that they have been at, to be absolutely honest, I wonder if it will ever be the same, because they're not going to have one of the best players, if not the best player in history, with them for much longer. There needs to be a complete rebuild of the club, and rebuilding La Masia, that's impossible to think in those terms, because to rebuild a whole system doesn't take a season. It takes 5, 10 years, 15 years. That's how long it takes. And also, I have to say, I'm very dubious about the identity of the new manager. If what I hear is correct, I genuinely don't think he's right. I'm talking about Ronald Koeman here. I'm actually a bit astounded that he would be considered for that job at that particular moment in time. But there you go. What do I know about it? He's proved a lot of people wrong with the national team, but he hasn't proved wrong about their capacities to be a great club manager and to arrive in this mess. Despite, you know, his the legacy he's left at Barca as a player, despite, you know, the prestige and the fact that anybody would be better than poor Quique Setién, who was dealt this horrible hand. It's the team is too old. It's as simple as that. It needs to be completely redone, rethought, and to be given a game identity again. And is Ronald Koeman the man who can do it within the season? No, it's going to take a while. And I don't think anyway, you know, it was a conjunction. The stars aligned for this particular team from 2006 onwards up until about, 2015?
Yeah.
And with a prodigious generation of players, exactly like they aligned for Manchester United at one point. And not to the same extent, by the way. Just like they aligned for Arrigo Sacchi's Milan, you know, at one point. And these are sides that, you know, will be talked about as long as people talk about football as among the greatest. So that's the problem. The bar is placed too high. It's placed much too high.
Yes.
Let's have them becoming a good team again and not this absolutely awful, awful thing, shadow, ghost, a shameful ghost that we saw against Bayern. That's what we can hope for. I mean, we need a good Barcelona.
Philippe, on that note, as always, thanks so much.
Thank you, guys.
Hi, I'm Mick McCarthy, and I'm second generation Irish and very proud of it.
We're ready for a bit of verbal sparring, eh? What you got for me this morning? What pile of have you got for me this morning? I answer questions on anything, religious, politics, health, you know, sexual problems. And if I haven't experienced them, I know somebody who has. So, you
know. Some people might think that's 2 points dropped, and I say some people can f*** off.
Yeah, but I don't give a flying about and slaughtering. I told you before, did not. It's like.
If anybody's not happy, write to me at goandgetyourselffettled.com.
Have you come in the red suit and the white beard today, or what? Shall I come and sit on your lap and ask?
Does your father know I'll bet?
Oh, I haven't told him yet.
I just wonder, do you...
Sorry, the keeper's a big tart doing that, because there's nothing wrong with it.
I said, are you the physio? He said, no, I am the head of medicine, technical. And I said to him, how wide's your door? So can you just put physiotherapist on it like everybody else used to?
And like I say, if I've lost anything, any friends, then they're lost, believe me. I am pleased on that. And I'm pleased I came off tonight, and I'm pleased I was angry, and I'm pleased I shed a few tears, and I'm pleased I kicked that coffee pot across the room. And I'm pleased I feel like I do now, because I know the old feeling's still there. And when that goes, then if that feeling goes, I'll pack it in.
Mm-hmm. Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. More confident than United before a Europa League final. Gamble responsibly. See dunluie.net.
Now, welcome back. Let's go over to Barcelona. Andy West is standing by. Good evening.
Good evening. Good evening.
Where do we start with this mess?
Well, I think if we really want to go into it, if we've got enough time, we have to start a number of years ago, because the current president, Josep Maria Bartomeu, was the right-hand man of the former president, Sandro Rosell, who, you may recall, was forced out because of the way the club conducted the Neymar transfer way back in 2013. They were found to have underdeclared the amount they paid. It ended up in the courts. One of the club's own members was the person who took it to the courts to force Rosell out. He later went to prison, which was unrelated to that, quite controversial because it was thought to be linked to the Catalan independence campaign. But Bartomeu, his right-hand man, stayed on and was elected president, was named president to replace Rosell. And everything that's been since then has really undermined the old cherished image that Barca had. When we saw them a decade ago playing the best football that we'd ever seen, they also had this image. Mesco un club, more than a club. They were admired worldwide, not only for the way they played, but for the way they conducted themselves as a club. And that has been very gradually eroded over the years, and that's been reflected both on and off the pitch. And it's led to where we are now, which is a complete loss of values, of principles, of clarity in how they try to do things, both on and off the pitch. Everyone knows Barca have this reputation for the way they play and historically for the way they did things as a club. But those things under Bartomeu and before him, his predecessor, who he was close to and still is close to, Rosell, all that has been eroded to the point of not even being there anymore.
Barcelona is a notoriously political club, and it's political at all levels, even in a very obvious one like the presidential elections. And you mentioned Bartomeu, who I do want to ask you about in a moment in a bit more detail, and Sandro Rosell before him. But then before them, 03 to 2010, it was Juan Laporta, who all the players are huge fans of, who is credited with, you know, reinstalling the Cruyffian way and seems to have done a brilliant job. Even just that model of the president being elected every however many years and therefore the potential for a change of direction meant that this was always very possible. This current situation that Barcelona find themselves in was always very possible.
And it always has been this way. Going back decades, there have always been controversies over the presidents and the presidential campaigns. And yes, ugly politics at time, smear campaigns and dirty tricks to try and get one side out or to try and keep another side out of power. There are good sides to this. What we should point out, and this is where Barca are a model that many clubs would love to follow, because we get so much criticism in modern sport, especially modern football, about the ownership of these big clubs, most big clubs now being in the hands of oil tycoons or oil states or Russian oligarchs. No one likes that. Barca are owned by their members. They're fully owned by the local people who are members of the club. You can't become a member unless you have close links already, unless you live in the region or have family who are already members. So that is very praiseworthy. Mm. The model of local ownership, fan ownership, is very real. But the downside of that is that when it becomes so big that the politics comes in, who's going to be in control of this massive beast that is part of the people, because there are factions within the people. When there are so many of them, 150, 160,000 members, there's going to be a lot of different opinions, and there's going to be a lot of self-serving as well. People who come to power or come to a position of influence to serve their own wider ambitions, not just because they want to serve the football club.
If people are just tuning into the news this evening, you won't be shocked to hear that Kike Setien has been sacked. Ronald Koeman fully expected now to take over. That's imminent. The board met today. So on to Bartomeu, the current president. He's been president since 2014. So I understand that Barca have spent about 900 million on 29 players, and the numbers of whom you could count as being outright successes, you could count on one hand, if not even maybe one finger. It's been that dramatic screw up on that front. So that's not good. But can you give me the simplistic version or the widely accepted version of what exactly Bartomeu has done wrong? I know Juan Laporta was very much a Cruyffian, and Cruyff had his ear, and he took Cruyff's advice, and he appoints Pep, and he does all these amazing things in hindsight, you know, ballsy things. What has Bartomeu done wrong? What's the biggest charge against him?
I think he's been weak. I think that's the general summing up of the situation. It's not easy, because Barca are in this landscape that I mentioned a couple of minutes ago, where other clubs in the elite have all these resources, have endless resources. And Barca, owned by members, don't have that. They don't have the sugar daddy who's going to pump in billions. So they have to find a way to try to compete. But he's done that in a haphazard way, both in terms of the squad planning and the management of the egos at the club. We've done well to go this long without talking about Lionel Messi, who is probably the most powerful figure at the club, both on and off the pitch, more so than Bartomeu. And of course, when you have a player like Messi, you want to keep him happy. You've got to pay him well. You've got to surround him with the people he wants. You've got to try and give him the style of football that he wants, with the coaching staff that he wants. But Bartomeu's given too much to Messi. And the phrase that's well known locally is the Club de Amigos, the friends club that runs the dressing room. Messi, Suarez, Piqué, Busquets have too much power, Jordi Alba. And what Bartomeu has sanctioned over the years is this bowing to Messi's wishes at all times to give him the teammates that he wants by giving them huge contracts to keep them at the club, even when it's been clear for a couple of years that Busquets and Jordi Alba in particular are in decline and have been. They still were rewarded with new long-term contracts on huge money, so that there's no prospect of them ever going away. And Messi, for all his greatness, obviously, he is only a player, and he doesn't have that perspective or that experience or the qualifications to make decisions about the wider club, yet they've allowed him to. They've tried to bring in players that he wanted, but with the farce of trying to get Neymar back after letting him go, bringing in Coutinho because they thought Messi would play with him. And it's just been a lack of consistency and a lack of long-term planning. So I think Bartomeu has been weak, and that weakness has manifested in lurching from one short-term decision to the next, none of which have really been consistent. And failing to have a clear direction. And that's reflected in the fact that, I can't remember the exact numbers, but I think there's only two board members remaining from the time that he took over. All the others have left for various reasons, either because he's disagreed with them or they've disagreed with things that he's been doing. So there's not been that core philosophy that has gone through the last 6 years. It's been making it up as they've gone along.
I mean, it's very understandable in many ways, isn't it, that having the greatest player potentially in the history of the game would railroad planning, and short-termism would set in, and keeping that player happy would become a priority. You have to keep that player, you know, that is the end game here. Every season you keep him, that is job done in many ways, and you get away with so much keeping him. So it's very understandable, and yet I understand the criticism as well. Dermot Corrigan, I saw a piece there on The Athletic, and there was just one small paragraph which jumped out at me. It was mainly about Setien, the manager. And he had the temerity in training to, instead of letting Messi be the joker in the matches, i.e. all of us will have, you know, been at training sessions and you're doing a match and there are odd numbers, so someone gets a bib, and whichever team has possession, that player in the bib plays with the team in possession. And it seems Messi, you know, so in charge of everything, that just by as a matter of course, was always the joker in the training session. So when there's a match on, even numbers or not, Messi gets the bib. He never has to do any tackling. He's just with the team in possession. And Setien threw him, you know, a normal bib, as if to say, you're a normal player. And this did not go down well. And I kind of thought, ooh, can see where there's trouble in this dressing room when the leader, as he gets older, is doing very little work and very little chasing around. And it's been like that for a number of years. And the Club des Amigos is the other point you made there, which was interesting, Andy. There has to be a reason that 29 signings to the cost of 900 million have failed. And it doesn't seem like the nicest dressing room to try and integrate yourself into.
No, and there have been many tales of players who just haven't felt at home, haven't felt liked. Griezmann is the most recent example, a big money signing. They pursued him for 2 years. I mean, that was a very strange pursuit in itself, that Griezmann very publicly and in a quite humiliating way turned them down when they thought they'd signed him. He made his own video with the support of a production company owned by Gerard Piqué. He turned Barcelona down. A year later, they came back to him and then put him in on the left wing in a position that he is unfamiliar and unsuited to. And Messi never has looked comfortable playing with him. So it's been the problem with Setien on the most recent problems that he's had was that he didn't have the authority because he didn't have the track record of winning trophies. He was a good player, but he wasn't a world star player. Then he didn't have that credibility in Messi's eyes to tell him what to do. But Messi does have to take criticism as well. You know, he's papered over so many cracks for Barcelona because, as you say, he's best player in the world. You keep him, he will do so much for you just by him being there. But if we think of his career, when has he really been at his very, very peak? There were two phases, and one was under Pep Guardiola, and the other was under Luis Enrique. Strong, strong personalities, leaders who told him how he was going to play. Guardiola was the one who turned him into a false nine, who took him from that position on the right wing and said, I want you in the middle of the field. He told Messi where to play. A few years later, it was Luis Enrique who turned that around because other teams had worked out how to combat the false nine, that the teammates weren't the same. And he was the one who put Messi on the right wing, with Suarez through the middle and Neymar on the left, that ended up in the treble. Luis Enrique, very strong character. And the weaker managers under whom Messi has played haven't got that much out of him because as amazing as he is as a player, he does still need to be part of a team rather than trying to be the whole team. And at times, it's been just sad to watch. It's almost like a playground where all the kids stand around and wait for the best player to do something. And he has that responsibility, feels that he has to. Everyone else is scared to do anything other than give the ball to him. And it's just completely dysfunctional as a team and has been for a long time. And I feel sorry for Setien because he never had a chance to put his mark on the team, especially with everything that happened with Suarez and Dembélé getting injured all as soon as he got there. Then the COVID situation that meant he basically lost the team that he was trying to build, and coming back in that strange situation with so many games in such a short space of time, losing Arthur, a player that he wanted to have as a key midfielder because the club had to balance the books, and the replacement couldn't even play because he hasn't signed yet, Pjanic. So he never had a chance. He was managing not even with one hand behind his back, with a blindfold on, couldn't even attempt to do the things that he wanted to do with the team.
I was surprised to read that the average age of the team on Friday night was 29, but they looked beaten down. They looked more like a bunch of 35-year-olds. Maybe there's just a lot of miles on the clock, and by all accounts, training isn't the most intense these days either. So everything we've discussed there, that brings us to Ronald Koeman. Now, Messi will have to, at least some degree, respect his playing credentials, and we all, you know, remember of a certain vintage's free kick in the 92 final. Is he the right type of personality, Andy, to try and whip Messi into shape and put some kind of shape on the team as a whole?
Probably yes. Whether he's got the coaching ability to do so is another matter.
Yeah.
because he's hardly been a spectacularly successful manager over the many years that he has been coaching. So whether he'll actually be able to get the clarity they need on the training ground is another matter. But personality-wise, yeah, he's very confident and very strong-minded. He took that to extremes, actually, in his last spell in Spain when he was in charge of Valencia. He tried to do exactly that, shut out a couple of the big names of the squad at the time. Joaquin was one of them. And that basically ended his time there. So he's had the experience of trying to do it on a smaller club, and it didn't go too well for him. Mm. The problem is for any manager, whether it's Ronald Koeman or anyone else, they've got such a short squad. If you look at the lack of options on the bench for Setien during these games, and they've got such major financial problems that the same problems that Setien faced throughout his short time, Koeman's going to face them as well in terms of what do you do with Busquets? What do you do with Luis Suarez? Luis Suarez cannot be a regular starter anymore. He's as the old phrase goes, his legs have gone.
Yeah.
He's still good for a half-hour burst from the bench. He'd be a great squad player. But do you want to spend so much on wages for someone who's a squad player with all the political ramifications that has as well, because he's the assistant to Messi in the dressing room? Mm. Can you persuade Luis Suarez to leave? There's rumours that Ajax wants him. Can you persuade Messi that it's time for Suarez to leave? What are you going to do about Busquets? Busquets can't play as a starter regularly anymore. Jordi Alba can't play as the left-back regularly anymore. But they don't have any money at all. They need to make money. They've got to sell players. So they're going to sell people like Rakitic and Vidal and try and get some money for Luis Suarez, maybe. But then who's going to play left-back? Because they haven't got anyone. And the academy has started drying up somewhat as well. There's not the same traffic coming through from below as before, partly because for many years the young players weren't given opportunities. So it's, even for any manager, it's a massive, massive ask, because it's a small squad, it's an old squad, yeah, lacking many obvious qualities, and they don't have any money.
No, that is not easy. A final point, Andy, you're obviously over there and reading the coverage in the Barcelona area and beyond. The narrative has definitely taken hold in this part of the world, and even in our conversation, that Messi, for all his wonders, you know, is now increasingly approaching the point of being a problem. Problem is too strong a word, but it's a complicated situation. Is that discussed in the Barcelona media, or is Messi beyond reproach even in the media circles there?
No, it has been for a while, for a long time. Going back to, I remember that season 2012-13 when he scored 90-odd goals in a calendar year and broke all sorts of goal-scoring records. The word then, I think it was first coined, Messi dependencia. Dependence upon Messi, as if to say, what happens if he doesn't score? And now that has been taken over the years to absurd extremes, and we have to face the prospect, because he can't be enjoying this situation either, because he's a winner, and more than anything, more than scoring goals or having a big role in the team, he wants to win. He's an arch competitor. He is not enjoying this situation at all. We have to consider the very realistic possibility. Because he's wanted Bartomeu out for a long time. He's not been happy with the president for a number of things. That Messi will leave. That Messi will decide he's just had enough. And it's too much for him. He's not able to flourish. And it's such a shame that the final years of his career have been wasted by a Barcelona board that hasn't known how to use him. Manchester City is the option for him. He knows he'll be comfortable there, not just with the manager, but with the key people behind the scenes that were in Barcelona before. The thing that will keep Messi in Barcelona, more than Barcelona Football Club, is his life there. His wife, kids, very settled. Family, very settled. He won't want to leave that. But the football club, I think he could very much do without.
Andy West, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Andy West there from Barcelona. 5-0 Inter Milan winners against Shakhtar Donetsk. It's gone full time in that Europa League semi-final.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. More confident than United before a Europa League final. Gamble responsibly. See dunluey.net.
Missing this?
When that didn't materialise, I think both Paulie and myself probably looked at each other and kind of thought, what next?
Then get this, the all-new OTB Sports app. Off the Ball, Ireland's premier sports channel, now has a new home, featuring the biggest names in Irish and world sports. Podcasts, interviews, news, commentary, analysis, plus almost 20 years of sporting archives. All free and ready when you are, at home or on the go. The new OTB Sports app. Download it now from the App Store and Google Play.